Welcome to SaaS Unlocked. Today I have friend, a buddy, who I know for a while, and we've been working together on several projects. He is CEO and founder of Omri Horowitz Media. Welcome, Omri, to the show.
Thank you, Prateek.
It's long awaited. I wanted to invite you quite earlier, but the calendars were not matching up. But thank you again for your time. And we really want to cover your story. So just to begin with, maybe you can share your backstory. We would love to learn how you actually came into the PR industry, how you're so much active on social media, creating that amazing stories for startups. Share with us.
Awesome, man. So first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. You know how much I love your work, and I've been interviewed you on my show, and it was a huge success. Tons of views. And it's always a pleasure. So a little bit about myself. So I was born in Israel, but then the whole family moved to California. So I spent my childhood in California, in Sunnyvale. My father, he's from tech, so he worked in tech. So I got a lot of, you know, I always heard things about tech and startups and stuff like that, you know, growing up. And then we moved back to Israel. I even did my army service in Israel. And mm-hmm. when I finished my army service, I started writing for this local Israeli publication. So I was writing stories, like short stories, you know, not very reporter-like, but more stories. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I wanted to be a writer.
Was it Times of Israel?
No, it was not Times of Israel. It was you would laugh, but it was called the Caesarea News. So I lived in a town called Caesarea.
It's a beautiful town.
It is a beautiful town. It's a beautiful town. It's right on the beach. It's like Malibu, just the Israel version of it. And I was writing for Caesarea News. It was like a super local publication, super small publication. But, you know, that's how I started. And, you know, I got my experience from there. And then I traveled back to California. So I traveled, you know, to California again. And then I spent some time in San Francisco and Brooklyn and, you know, and really enjoyed my time in the United States. And I actually wanted to stay. I actually wanted to stay in the States. But I needed to make money. So one of my friends, who I'm not really in contact with yet, he basically told me that he's starting digital marketing or an agency. And I didn't really know what that meant. Mm-hmm. But he was in Israel. And I said, okay, let me go to Israel. Let's see what's all about digital marketing. And this is a funny story. So I think your audience will enjoy this. So I came to Israel. And we wanted to launch this digital marketing agency. And this friend came to me and he said, listen, let's do 50-50 of the, mm-hmm. you know, 50-50 legit. I'll handle all the business stuff. You'll do the actual marketing and whatever. And I said, okay, that's a great idea. And then a few days later, he came to me and he said, you know what? I think that he should have 60 and I should have 40. And then I told him, okay, you're the guy who does digital marketing. Okay, let's go with that. And then a few days later, he came to me and he said, you know what? I think he should have 70 and you, Omri, you should have 30. And he kept doing that. And then a few days later, I told him, listen, man, fuck this shit. Go do your thing. I'll go do my own thing. And then because I'm such a competitive person, I was like, hey, how can I build a digital marketing agency by myself? And that's basically what I did. I built an agency that that does like PPC and does like PR and those kind of stuff. And there was this businessman who had a lot of companies in Cyprus and in London in the travel mm-hmm. industry. Mm-hmm. And he fell in love with me. He really loved me. He said, like, I like your drive. I like your passion. He took me in. I started doing PR for all his companies. And that's how I kind of started. It was an amazing experience. I was probably 20, 22 or something. And I was traveling to Cyprus almost every weekend and to London. And I was doing, you know, working with like older folks while, you know, and it was a big learning experience. And then I got an opportunity to do advertising for startups. So you know Yoel Israel. So I met him and he told me, listen, come work for me. Do LinkedIn ads, learn proper tech skills. And in tech, you can really scale in tech more than you can probably scale in any other industry, as you know. And that's what, and then I started working for Yoel. I did that for a bit. And then during that time, I started building a podcast. And I interviewed a lot of big names in the VC world, like Dobby Francis, Zohar Lefkovich, Oren Ze'ev, a lot of famous entrepreneurs. And when I did that, I started writing also for The Times of Israel, which you mentioned earlier, and then other publications. And then I was like, hey, now I have tons of leverage. I started building this following on LinkedIn. I have leverage. I know reporters now. I have connections. Why not open up my tech PR agency? And that's what I did. And today, you know, we have over 30 clients. We have some of the most successful startups in Israel as our clients. And we're a team of 6 people, actually adding someone new tomorrow. So it's going to be 7 people. And we're we're hustling. We're really hustling hard and providing results for our clients. And I'm still doing the podcast, as well.
And the best part is, like, you went niche in digital marketing. Digital marketing can be very broad. You know, I was all over the place when I started my consulting. So that's how, like, my journey started. So I went from, like, consulting clients for PPC, social media, whatever came in my way, I just took it, right? But I didn't understand, like, you know, you have to be niche. You have to build your specialty and skill set that you are master at. So for example, like, you know, I then, like, you know, pivoted and built my agency on marketing automation, which is HubSpot, which got popular. And we were also, like, you know, helping clients with Salesforce and Pardot. And then came LinkedIn, which is like, again, I saw this opportunity earlier and then you have to build on it, right? So definitely right choice. We all have, like, you know, something fuck up stories happens to us while we are on this entrepreneurial journey. Would you like to share something you shared already, which is, like, you know, having a co-founder can be a tough, maybe you want to share something else?
So, like, you know, when I'm thinking about this type of stuff, I don't have any specific thing that I can mention, but I can tell you something that I think will be in value to your audience. And I think me and you talked about this. A few years ago by now. I suffered from anxiety. I had really bad anxiety. And I would have panic attacks before I would fly for, like, conferences and stuff like that. I would get insane panic attacks. I couldn't move. I would stay in my bed. I couldn't do anything. I would not feel good every time before a flight. And then I had this flight that I was supposed to go to London for work, for PR, do PR work in London. That was a few years ago already, probably like 5 or 6 years ago. And I didn't want to go because I had this incredible panic attack. And you know what happened? My dad came to me. He took me physically, he took me. He said, no way, Omri, you're going on this flight. I don't care. He dragged me to the train station. And I was like this, dude. I was like, you know, in panic attack, right? I couldn't move. He threw me into the train station and he forced me to go to London while I was having a panic attack. And that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Because he forced me to do that, my brain understood that, like, the panic attack is, like, you know, it's not real, it's like fake. And, you know, and it was a good trip in London. So, like, I think that's, you know, sometimes you look at entrepreneurs and you're like, hey, they're so sharp and stuff like that. And yes, we, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs are sharp and it is a big skill set, but, you know, a lot of people suffer from mental health, and I think it's important to talk about it. And I know you talked about it as well. And after that, I've done many things to help my mental health, and I'm always having it as a priority to be in great mental health shape. And I advise everyone to do so.
There's one thing that I would like to add to what you said, Omri. This specific part, I think what helped me become stronger today, it's Israel. Because Israel gives you that kind of mindset to face it. You know, let's face it, like rather than running away from the situation. And this mindset, it took me like a couple of years to adjust in this society and the mindset and the culture we have. Israelis are tough, right?
Yeah.
They are maybe smartest people that I've seen, that I've hang out with. But at the end of the day, everyone was not strong. They became stronger. One of the things that help is army that you go to, right? It makes you so tough. And mentally, you become so strong to fight the things that come across your way. So really love this culture and this this mindset that Israelis have created in this last 50 years, I would say.
And I will add to that, that you said the army. So my dad, my dad who pushed me to that train, my dad was a big commander in the army. Wow. So he had that mindset. He's like, you know, but it's like, you know, David Goggins.
So no, I've heard of him, I think.
Yeah, he's like Navy SEALs. He's like a Navy SEALs. So my dad is also, he's a really strong person, unbelievably strong.
Wow. It's a blessing to have such father.
It is.
Maybe your journey was like, you know, you learned things before you even like, you know, found the real thing that you want to do for PR. And maybe in future you want to scale it to next level, or maybe you will build your own product, right? So what do you think, like, you know, service-based is the best, or you want to go product? Because sometimes I feel being into like service industry for last seven, eight years now, I feel that product is more scalable. What do you think?
Man, you know, listen, a service-based company is not for everyone. I tell you that it's not for everyone. I don't think I think maybe 5% of entrepreneurs, even the successful entrepreneurs, are going to be able to operate in service-based, because it's, as you know, it's not easy. You have tons of clients, tons of demands. You need to manage, you know, hundreds, literally hundreds of projects at a time. So for, I'll give an example that we have 30 something clients now. Each client has at least two projects going on at a time. You know, let's say a project is a thought leadership thing, and then another project is, you know, getting a featured article or an interview or listicle. So that's like 60 projects at a time. And not to mention that some of them have more projects and there's my projects, and it's a ton of different things. But it's, you know, once you work in a service agency, you become a monster. Like you really become a master. You know how to delegate, you know how to, you know, you're super productive. You have an amazing skill set. So I think that's definitely that. Yes, I think, yeah.
Maybe I want to ask you. So yeah. when you're working on service-based industry, what happens, like, you know, one day I felt like, you know, when I'm like, still my business model is more on the service side and I'm trying to pivot it in towards like marketplace or product. But I feel that if I'm not here one day, something might collapse, because all of the customers that we have they came through my trust that I built along the years. So what are your thoughts on this?
That's a great question. Look at my logo. The company's name is Omri Hurwitz Media, right? So, you know, yes. People, when they work with us, they want to work with me. Why do they want to work with me? Because I build trust with them, you know, if it's through LinkedIn, if it's through referrals and stuff like that. So I can't come and tell them, hey, you have this account manager, his name is whatever, and he's going to manage everything, you know? I can't do that. And that's a bummer. And that's something that we're working on to see how we can do that. Because I want to do stuff. Like, I want to travel more. I want to, you know, spend more time with my girlfriend. I want to do those kind of stuff. And right now it's not that easy. So I don't have a good answer for that. And, you know, did you read the 4-Hour Work Week with like Tim Ferriss?
That is good in books, I would say. I read half of it, maybe like two chapters, let's be honest. But I felt like, you know, it can happen, but to follow that specifically, it's tough.
It is. And like, you need to do a lot of delegation and automation and stuff like that. And in a lot of service businesses, you can't really do that. I have something super valuable for you. You want to hear this? Hear this. When I was, and this I learned from Yoel. So when if you go to my LinkedIn profile or the company's profile, you will see that our motto is result-oriented media coverage and PR. What do I mean by that? I mean by that that ideally, I want to be measured only by results. Because our results are so good, our PR results are so good, and they're like 300% above the benchmark of the industry, that's all I want to be judged of. The problem is that a lot of B2B companies, they want customer service. They want it to feel like someone is with them, and they're someone who's like in-house in their team and everything. And Yoel, that he's a master of that. He always told me, listen, Omri, customer service is much more important even than the results. And I understand that now, and I know that, but still, I'm always trying to find a way to convince clients to only measure us on results. Because I don't want a client to measure me on my character. You know, I might be nice one day, another day I might be more pissed about something, another day I might be, because you're a hustler, you know, hustlers they move like that. I don't have the patience to say, okay, customer service time, how can I help you today? You know, it's like, it's not my thing. My thing is to go and hunt and get results. So I'm still trying to figure out a way. But
that's brutal, but that's brutal, but that's the way I think. At the end of the day, any business wants to get results. They don't care like if you are nice or like, you know, polite. It's good to have, everybody is polite and professional, but at the end of the day, if you're not going to deliver the results, you're going to be fired anyways. So
exactly. All the other agencies, like I'll give you another example that maybe can be more productive. You know, companies come to us after they fire their PR agency. And then they tell us, and I ask them, why did you fire them? And they said, listen, they were really good in processes, and they were really good in building systems and showcasing on the spreadsheets. But in the end of the day, they didn't bring in results. And then I tell them, guys, okay, guys, we have processes and systems as well, but our focus is the results. I'm not going to spend an hour meeting with you every week. Like I don't like that. It's a waste of time. We're going to bring results and we optimize as we go. And I think that really helped us. And that's why we have a team of 6 people who manage 30 something clients. And I see other agencies that have 30 clients and they have like 20 people. So I think that's a big help.
Let's talk about PR. When it comes to, like, you know, for startups, you being an expert in this industry, how can, like, you know, startup have like an effective PR strategy that will actually drive awareness and trust in the community that they're targeting?
Awesome. So there's 3 levels. The first level is exactly what you build, which is the LinkedIn game. If you're a B2B startup, there's 2 places where you have to dominate. It's LinkedIn and Twitter. You need to be able to showcase consistently on LinkedIn and Twitter. If you don't have LinkedIn and Twitter working for you, everything else doesn't matter. That's the first stage. I'll give you an example. Even if you get a lot of articles, and even if you have a funding announcement and you get an article in TechCrunch, because they only write about funding announcements, and you get that article, and even if you publish it on LinkedIn, but you haven't done LinkedIn consistently, it doesn't matter. It's okay. It's a few website. You will have a spike of website visitors and that's it. So the first level is dominate social media, LinkedIn and Twitter. And if you know your audience, they should see what you've done. They should see what I've done. They should see what Hill of Fold has done, what Yoel has done, and really see how we've been able to build our brands on LinkedIn, because that's the most important thing. So that's the first thing. The second thing is owned media. What do I mean by owned media? I mean about thought leadership. I mean about podcasts. I mean about those kind of stuff. For example, look at what you're doing with this podcast, right? This is owned media. You're building your own media asset. You're gaining leverage. Look at what we're doing with JT in NOps, Hacker Noon. Mm-hmm. He's writing for Hacker Noon now. He's showcasing his expertise to the Hacker Noon audience and to those kind of people. So that's the second thing. Another example, I did this for myself with like Entrepreneur, Forbes, Yale Finance. We have other great clients that we do this on Entrepreneur as well, and Forbes. And yeah, I can give you like a tons of examples that we build that second layer. Mm-hmm. And then the third layer is the outreach. And that's that's feature articles, listicles, and those stuff that reporters write about you. But you can't jump to the third thing without dominating the first two. And I think that's the new PR game. That's the modern PR game. Traditional PR, they did it differently. They only wanted to do the outreach, and they messed up. Because why? Because back in the day, that was the only thing they could do. Because back in the day, there wasn't no social media. There was no podcast. You can only get a New York Times article. So that's what you aimed for. But now you have so many different things, and you need to kind of do those three things. And once you do those three consistently, publish on LinkedIn, do podcasts, and build your own media assets through thought leadership, and do outreach, oh boy, man, you become a monster. And you become a monster. Look at what Walnut has done, that we love collaborating with them. And our other clients like WinAI and EquityB and Spike Email, there's tons of them, and yeah, that's kind of my answer.
So when it comes to like, let's say, outreach, what is something like startups should aim for in terms of having their PR published? It should be like once a week. What should be the frequency look like?
Great question. Okay, so it depends how you divide it. Okay, I'll give you an example. We believe, Armie Hurwitz Media believes, that a company needs to have at least three articles or podcasts or interviews about them each month. If they don't have at least three, it doesn't matter what else they do, they're not going to go above the noise, right? But a lot of startups have a problem. Why? Because they're targeting only specific publications. And by doing that, they're missing out on so many other, eyeballs. And then they end up having three articles once a year, like three articles a year, So 90%, 70%, because that's the actual number, 70% of the clients that come to us who have worked with a different agency, something like 70%, they have had maybe 10 articles in 1 year, maybe 10, and that's even if I'm, and it's just not enough. It's not enough. And we always say that if your startup's not getting at least three articles a month, it's just not, you're not going to rise above the noise.
So I've been seeing a lot of platforms that came in recently for publishing your PR to 200 plus websites in one go, spending like a couple of $100. How do you differentiate quality or quantity?
So what you're referring to is like, it's like platforms that do press release distributions. Yeah. That's fine. It's not the same thing as like an individual article. So for our audience that doesn't kind of understand, like, okay, so press release distribution is you basically you put it on a wire. So you come in, you have like a, let's say a Pratik launches this new podcast, and he puts it on a press release and it distributes it. Mm-hmm. Once you have this announcement, you can do things. One, you can send it to reporters and ask them to cover the story. And then what a lot of people do simultaneously is they put it on the wire, and the wire basically feeds it automatically to a lot of different publications. Now, if you have a strong story, you probably don't need the wire because you have a strong story. But if you don't have a strong story, yes, I would advise you to put it on the wire, but it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. It just starts there. So even if you put your press release on the wire, you still want to get at least two or three featured articles on that specific announcement. And I think that's kind of like what differentiates, the idea here. That's why it's super important to shoot for featured and listicles and those type of articles, which are harder to get, but they have more value. However, I'm not going to shit on press release distributions. Press release distributions are still valuable, and you should still do one a month of those, like, big, you know, 200, like, you know, shoot public, you know, publications. And there's great services. You could do it really cheaply through them.
Thank you for sharing that. And so finally, I want to ask you specifically about PR. When it comes to, like, you know, doing effective PR strategy for businesses, what is, like, you know, the businesses should focus on getting results when it comes to brand awareness? How long they should wait until they see results for doing PR strategy? The reason I'm asking is, let's say there are a lot of startups coming up these days and they want to build that brand awareness initially, but it's like SEO, right? It doesn't happen overnight. You have to invest time and you have to do it consistently to see results. What is your take on this?
I love this question. I love this question so much. And I have a whole philosophy on this. And I'm going to try to be as accurate as possible because there's really tons of value here. Every company, every startup has a different objective. Even when you say brand awareness can mean different things for different companies and different people. So I'll give you an example. If you measure brand awareness by the amount of eyeballs and the amount of recognition that a startup gets, then the amount of PR that they will need depends on the machine they have in store. Let me explain. So for instance, let's say if I do PR for Pratik, if Omri Heritz Media starts doing PR for Pratik, maybe we're going to be able to show results in 2 months and you're going to already see results. Why? Because you already built a big machine on LinkedIn and Twitter and through your podcast and everything, that every article that we get to you, you're going to put it into that machine, and the machine is going to showcase that article to a lot of people. Startups that don't have that machine and they need to, you know, they measure their PR activities only by the eyeballs they get from the articles, then it's going to take a much longer time. Right. So that's another thing. The second thing is about the story. So, for example, a lot of our clients come to us when they have a funding announcement. Once you have a funding announcement, you have a good story and you get tons of articles. You get the TechCrunch article, you get a VentureBeat article, you get a Business Insider, Forbes, and then you're able to leverage those tier one articles because you have a really good story. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a good blitz in the start. But to maintain that blitz, you need to build that machine we talked in earlier. So it really depends. It really depends. It depends on what the startup is, what the story is. But in general, in a span of 6 months, 7 months, if you've been building that PR activity, if you've been publishing on social media, you should be seeing a significant result.
I think very well explained, Omri. When it comes to, like, you know, industry is being, like, you know, disrupted by AI, automation, no code platforms, and various other things that are happening right now. What do you think, like, you know, future of PR will look like in the next 5 years with all of these technologies out there?
I think more reporters are going to be looking for concise information and valuable information. If, you know, a few years ago, reporters, they would want, like, they would say, like, hey, give me this, I need this amazing story, and how is this company different from this company and stuff like this. I think today they're more in a place where they're like, hey, how can I get this information as concise and clear as possible? How can I, you know, from one email, how can I know what is your unique value proposition compared to someone else? And then they shoot for it and they go for it. And basically PR is moving much faster. The other side of this is that AI is making it increasingly helpful to generate articles. So it's going to be much easier for you to do thought leadership article and do that at scale. And then the third thing is platforms like Substack and Beehive. And there's a lot of different platforms that are coming out right now that you can build your own publication on top of those platforms And that AI really helps in that, in terms of generating the content. However, there is, a question mark here, is that there's other platforms like GPT-0 that they allocate, that reporters are using to see what has been written by AI and what has been written by human. I don't know how accurate these platforms are currently are. If you're searching it right now, it's called GPT-0.me. That's the name of the website. And I know a lot of editors and publications are using it. So it will be apparent to see how it will balance out. But in the end of the day, content is getting more and more commoditized. And the question is, how able are you able to build an individual brand, right? When Pratik, is building his individual brand, when you have, let's say you have your companies now, but let's say you have a new company tomorrow named whatever, let's name it Accelerator Success, okay? Because Pratik has built a brand for himself, then Accelerator Success will have a big PR advantage. And that's how I see modern PR.
So personal branding is way to go, definitely.
Of course, and that's going to be more and more like that, yes.
Thank you for sharing that, Omri. I think you covered most of the aspects of PR. And again, if somebody wants to reach out to Omri, he's quite open to responding on LinkedIn as well. Before we end this session, we have a special set of questions that we use for our guests, which is rapid fire round, which is more on the personal side of your thing. So I'll ask you 5 questions. You can take your time to answer that. It's not something that you have to hurry. Name one other company and CEO that inspires you and why.
Wow. Amazing. Wow. There's so many, dude, there's so many. Okay. Can I say several?
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be somebody famous. It can be someone around you, right? So.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. So Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce. I love what he's doing. He's an amazing, amazing marketer. He's built Salesforce on PR. So that's why I love him so much. And I think he's done remarkable work with Salesforce. And he's an example for someone who he built a real brand through PR. And he didn't just wing it. He's always doing PR. So Mark Benioff. The second one, I would say... Elon Musk and what he's doing, because it's Elon Musk, and just the productivity of what he's doing. That's machine level productivity, which I really admire. The third one I would say is Richard Branson, the CEO of, Virgin Airways.
Virgin Airlines.
Yeah, all Virgin Airlines and all those stuff. Because, dude, he's just making so much fun doing everything. He's just having fun. And he's he's a real entrepreneur, in the sense that he's building businesses and then he's having someone manage it for him. So, he's he doesn't have to be in the office. He built a whole lifestyle.
I would love to be in his shoes if I become a successful, him. It's much more balanced. If I say other entrepreneurs, sometimes they work too much and they forget to live the life, but he does that.
Exactly. So, for example, if you tell me, hey, Omri, what's more sexy to go and do what Elon Musk is doing or do what Richard Branson is doing? What Richard Branson is doing is super sexy, because he's enjoying life. He's in the moment and he's building things that then he's letting other people scale for them. So Richard Branson, if he built a service agency, he wouldn't need to be every day in the agency, right? He would build a whole thing, and that's genius. And I love Richard Branson. And, he's definitely someone who I think is, he's an ideal. He's an ideal for sure.
What's one of the best business advice you've ever received?
I think be
build
careful.
Personal brand.
Personal brand, but I have several. So be careful about taking advice. If you take advice for someone, make sure he has the credentials, right? He has the credentials. I can't offer you advice right now on how to build multiple, multiple businesses. I can give you really good advice on how to build a really super cool PR agency or a super cool marketing focused business. But so when you get advice, make sure you take it carefully and with a grain of salt. The other advice is work in sprints. I'll give an example. A lot of people, they don't really work, man. They spend their whole day in the office and they're just like this going all day long. No, you can work 4 hours a day, but hustle in those 4 hours, get what you want, be super accurate, you know, and have a plan for your day, and you're going to be much more productive. So work in a state of sprints, like a big hand, like how a big cat hunts. So that's another advice.
Perfect. What's one skill that has helped you become successful?
I think the ability to think outside of the box. I've never in school, I barely went to school. I played basketball, so I didn't study. But I always had street smarts. I always saw the world as it is. And being able to think outside of the box gives you so much leverage. That's the most important thing ever. It's more important than college, more important than anything else. I didn't go to college, and I'm really happy I didn't, because college puts you like in a certain frame of mind. And I'm always thinking outside of the box, like Richard Branson, always thinking outside of the box.
Super sexy.
Yeah.
So all of us like are into like, you know, this roller coaster, which is going up and down as an entrepreneur. We have stress, we have our moments, sometimes fun, sometimes challenging. There's something that requires motivation to go to the journey that we are on, right? So what motivates you the most?
I want to see how far I can do in this lifetime. I want to see how big, how grandiose I can make this experience for Omri Hurwitz. Because right now, my soul is in Omri Hurwitz in this lifetime. And I want to see how I can make this a gigantic thing. I want to be the next Richard Branson. I want, and I believe I will be the next Richard Branson. And that's my vision.
Wow. Final question. What movie, book, or a TV show that changed your life?
There's so many. I'm such a big fan of all of them, all of those content stuff. In terms of book, you need to read The Fountainhead by Ian Rand. Every entrepreneur should read this book. This is such a big book and influenced me a lot. So that's
maybe what's one core thing that you learned from that? Maybe if you want to share that.
So basically, The Fountainhead is the main character his name is Howard Roark. He only follows his passion. He's like a horse, right? That has no one is able to move him. He goes straight forward and he does what he believes in. He doesn't chase compliments from people. He doesn't chase recognition. He just focuses on the work itself, and it shows how in the end he's getting all the recognition and everything because he focused on the work itself. So that's definitely someone. He didn't listen to any outside. He was a rebel. He didn't listen to any outside noises. And yeah, I never listened to outside noises, and never have been since I was young. And I'm never going to listen to outside.
Actually, that's really a great advice. Maybe I will reflect on that. And also I would love to read that book. So again, Omri, this session was like one of the best sessions I had so far. And I'm not saying this lightly. I enjoy the energy that you bring to the table. You have so much insight to share. And I hope we can collaborate more and more on different events, maybe online, offline. We are both in Israel. So thank you so much for joining us today on SaaS Unlocked.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for having me, and come to my podcast soon. We'll do another one with you.
Thank you, Omri. Have a wonderful rest of your day, man.
You too, man. Bye-bye.